Ready to stop trading time for money and build a business that can scale? Then you're in good company. This is the Productize Podcast, where I chat with entrepreneurs who've transformed their businesses using the Productize service model. I'm your host, Brian Castle. Want to learn my best strategies for productizing your business? Then get my free crash course by going to productizecourse.com. Now let's get into the show. All right, got a bit of a different episode for you today on the Productize Podcast. Today I'm talking to my friend Galen Vinter. He's the founder of ProjectPulse.io, and they run a kind of a project status update tool for agencies. But actually, they're in the process of iterating that tool and possibly starting a new or launching a new version of it, which would be tailored more at productized services. So Galen actually reached out to me and asked if he could pick my brain about how we run our operations at Audience Ops. And of course, I obliged, and I thought it would be actually a good opportunity to record this and let you guys be kind of a fly on the wall for this conversation. And I'm glad that we recorded it, because we got into quite a few interesting things, kind of behind the scenes look at how Audience Ops runs. So we talked about how we communicate with our clients without letting things fall through the cracks, how we're actually scaling up the team and our service. Talked about various tools that we use to track our progress throughout our service. And we also talked about the specific canned email responses that we send to our clients at various stages, as well as internally between our teammates, which make a really efficient workflow in a lot of different ways. So that should be interesting to listen in on. We covered a much more than just that. So I think you'll enjoy this one. Stay tuned, and here we go. So you've been running Project Pulse, and that's been operating for a while now, and you've done a lot of learning. So I'm curious to know, how does Project Pulse work as a product, and what are your thoughts on what the next product or the next iteration of this will be, or how will it be different from Project Pulse?
Sure. Yeah. So Project Pulse is centered around the idea that client communication on projects is a pain point for consultants and agencies, so anyone providing services. And the key problems that we were trying to solve out of the gate were, we want an app that takes care of explaining in a really simple view where a project is, so a project status, current status, right, and what the plan is looking forward. And we wanted to be able to share that view with clients in real time, so like not a downloaded PDF. So we wanted to share that with clients immediately without the clients logging in. Mm-hmm. And we wanted that view to also be something that the client understood intuitively, not something that they had to learn. There was no clicking, there's no trying to understand what's going on. So concepts like milestones and deliverables needed to be integrated into that view, but needed to be self-explanatory.
Right. Yeah, I really love that idea of not requiring the client to log in. And that's something that I've been a big proponent of for many years. I mean, I used to do, web design work for clients, and I would use various project management tools over the years, but I always used them internally. Even today with Audience Ops, we've got our own tools that we use, but they're completely internal and they're kind of invisible to the client. Mm-hmm. And I just always thought that was important, and just like make it simple on the client, and let them see what they need to see or what they want to see.
Exactly. And I mean, there are definitely clients out there who have used Basecamp in the past, for example, but not all do. And so if you're, all of your projects rely on Basecamp and your client doesn't want to use it, then you're kind of, you're at a standstill in terms of, breaking your process. And so any process that you have, any kind of universal process you want to set, it has to basically get along with the clients who both will and won't use a system. And so that's definitely like a huge barrier for a lot of applications that, you could technically invite your client into, but you won't necessarily get participation.
Right.
Very cool. So we kind of, that was the first stage of the app, was getting the status page live, so a project status page. And then the second piece was really thinking about status reports and in real time, the same concept of having a landing page and being able to have a live view of a status report, but really pulling from the deliverables and delivering that via email. Because what we knew is that, clients also everyone uses email and people want things delivered directly to their email. And so things that happen in an app need to also be translated directly to email. And so that was our first kind of deep dive into delivering kind of all the information a client wants to email.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, I love that too. Like not requiring them to go bookmark a site or log in somewhere. It's just, it's coming to them in their email inbox. I like it.
And so I guess for the question of, you know, where are we going now? I think the most important next step is really playing on that last point. We know that the universal tool used by everyone is email. And regardless of what your personal views are on whether email is dying or not, we don't think it's going anywhere, and we know it's not going anywhere. And
I happen to fully agree with that. And I hear that all the time, you know, email is dying, and you see these apps pop up like, oh, it's going to be the email killer. I just don't agree with that. I feel like email is being used more today than ever. You know,
I totally dig the excitement around like email killers, but I just don't buy it either. I'm hold your horses. And I think that's, you know, Slack, I'm a huge Slack user, but Slack is not an email killer either.
I agree with that too. And that's, yeah, people call Slack an email killer. I just don't see it that way. I think it's a chat tool. I mean, that's what it is. And it works well for that.
You know? Totally. Yeah. And I go way back to like Google Wave. I don't know if you remember Google Wave.
Oh, yeah.
I thought Google Wave was awesome. And it like did everything and nothing at the same time. And I just dug like that. It had some really cool features. But yeah, there's just no email. We don't believe in the email killer thing yet. We haven't seen anything yet. But we do think that playing nicely with Slack or HipChat or other communication tools is really important. And so we understand that lots of agencies actually make a private Slack channel and invite their clients in. And so that we totally appreciate and totally respect.
Yeah.
But playing off of, you know, really kind of the foundation of, you know, bringing things to email is kind of your strongest foot forward. The new app that we're focusing on is really around, you know, enhancing those emails and owning the email and making bringing all the email that you send to clients under one roof. I'm really curious about some of your scaling issues in particular and how your team shares client communication.
Sure.
But when you but what we found kind of with other agencies is that they don't they have this problem where sharing client communications is actually hard. It actually ends up being like forwarding multiple emails. And then you say to yourself, you know, 3 months into a project, I remember back 3 months ago, we promised something, and then you realize you don't know if you promised it or someone told you that they promised it, and it's not in your inbox, so you need to ask them to go look through their inbox. And so there's all these so really what it comes down to is like you don't really care who said it or when it was said. You just want to know what was said. You want to know what the actual communication was.
Right.
And if it doesn't all live in one place, if it lives in everyone's inboxes individually, and it's not searchable, and it's not really associated with a client, just associated with individuals, then it's kind of lost. It actually becomes, I mean, you can make the argument that Gmail search is super powerful and gives you everything you want, but the truth is it becomes as buried as Slack. Conversations can become buried.
Right.
And so there's a really important concept that we don't do in chat and we don't really do in email because we email so much, is that you don't like set milestones. You don't flag emails as saying, hey, like, this email has this purpose and it was set in time and I want to memorialize what was going on here. This is a status report that is really going to matter in the future. Or this is an approval that was made by a client that we want to have a kind of a data association with it. We want to say at the end of the project, we want to say, hey, I want to line up all the approvals that happened in a project and just know that like we got 24 out of 24 approvals or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And so kind of bringing not removing email from the equation, but bringing all those other pieces of that's usually considered part of project management into email, and so creating more rich email, and then also organizing those emails on our app side is what our kind of focus is moving forward.
Well, I mean, I could talk for days about how we handle those problems in audience ops. I could talk all about that in just a minute. I guess the thing, you know, like. Really the purpose of this call, the way it came about is you wanted to have a conversation about how we do operations at Audience Ops and how it might inform the development of the next iteration of your product. I just like I wonder how much of this would be what I'm going to talk about is like specific to audience ops and like our own unique needs and requirements, and like I don't know how much of that can actually be translated to a tool, because it what we need is, it might be pretty different from what like a broader customer base might need, you know. But yeah, I mean, like
everyone says that it's totally great. I really appreciate that. But it's funny that everyone definitely that there's customizations to workflows. That workflows are very specific to both you and the kind of clients you're serving. But we've actually found in having loads and loads of user conversations and prospective user conversations is that that there, you can definitely distill down some of the basics, especially when it comes to client communication. When you when you're working with email, like there's only so many different ways of doing it.
Yeah.
Well, there's definitely common points.
Yeah, I mean, so email specifically, we use Help Scout, and I actually I actually really like it for a lot of the reasons that you're talking about. And I used Help Scout in the same way in my previous business, Restaurant Engine, as we do here in Audience Ops. And so basically the idea is for our clients in Audience Ops, they're in touch with one email address. That's hello@audienceops.com. And on our end, which is completely invisible to the client, all that email is going into Help Scout, and then that's operated. I mean, right now it's mostly operated by our one project manager. Her name is Kat. But occasionally I'll hop into conversations in Help Scout. We actually have another project manager as well who sometimes goes in there. And so that's what allows us to have multiple people hopping in and out of conversations without having different email addresses. And so so all the client needs to be in touch with is hello@audienceops.com. And so I think we use Help Scout a little bit differently than most other Help Scout users. Like most of them use it as like a customer support help desk for their software or whatever. In our case, we actually use it more of as like an outbound tool rather than like an inbound tool. We're not so much fielding lots of inbound emails from our clients. We do occasionally, but for the most part, it's us generating emails out to our clients where. Like what you deal with, like we basically give them status updates. So every Monday, Kat will send an email to all of our clients saying, you know, here's the preview of next week's article that we've set up for you. She'll also send out like monthly reports coming out from Help Scout, and all that sort of thing. So I mean, a few features that we really like about Help Scout is, like I said, having one consolidated email address, allowing multiple people on my team to go in and out and of those conversations. Another thing that we use pretty often is the notes feature inside Help Scout. So sometimes Kat will get a question from a client and she'll say, you know, she'll write an internal note to me saying, hey, Brian, I'm not sure how I should answer this, or maybe it's better for you to answer this. And then I can go in there and see that note right in line with the public conversation, not public, but you know, between me and the client. And so that's kind of cool. Or sometimes I'll just give Kat like instructions in a note, like this is how you can reply. So that's cool. The other thing that I like about using Help Scout for email with a team is that, it's easy to send links back and forth to specific conversations. So we also use Slack, internally for our team. So sometimes Kat will say to me in Slack, you know, hey, you know, this client had this question. I left you a note about it. Here's the link, you know, to that conversation, and pointing directly to Help Scout. And then all I need to do is click that link, and I'm immediately looking at that conversation. So that's pretty helpful. But then
it makes total sense.
Yeah, there are a few holes, I think. Another big tool that we heavily rely on is Trello, and that's what we use to manage our production line of articles. So every article, and this is like completely invisible to our clients, but on our end, what we do is every article that's in production has a Trello card, and it basically moves, you know, from left to right through a Trello board as it reaches different stages. Like it's upcoming, now it's in draft, now it's in editing, and now it's being set up in WordPress. We're setting up the social media posts. We're doing the newsletter. Then it goes into our final check, like final quality assurance check. Then it goes to Kat sending the preview to the client. Then it's published, and then after that it goes to promotion and syndication, and so it's just like a long production line.
Is that like 12 or 15 columns in Trello?
I'm not looking at it right now, but I think it's like 8 or 10, something like that.
Wow.
Yeah. And then like each Trello card itself has like its own checklist, and then the teammates also write comments on the Trello card just to give status updates internally, like, okay, this one's ready for editing, or this one's ready for setup in WordPress, something like that. And so we use that pretty heavily. I don't know if there is a way to do this, but we have not set it up, is to have a connection between Help Scout and Trello. I guess there are kind of integrations, but I don't know if they would integrate in the way that we need them to.
What would you want?
It would be cool to see, if we're in a conversation with a client, then in the sidebar in Help Scout to have a direct link to their cards in the Trello board.
And how do you associate cards with clients?
That's probably where the integration would break down. but the way that we do it is. How do we do it? Oh, in Trello, we use labels, and each client has a label. So, okay. And then that's what allows us to, we have a lot of clients now, which means we have a ton of articles going through our production line at any given time. And so we also use filters in Trello. So at any given time, you know, we can just use the filter, say like filter by this label or filter by this client name. And then we're only seeing articles or only seeing cards for that client. In Help Scout, it would be cool if we had in the right sidebar, when you're looking at a conversation with a particular client, maybe like show me all cards or show me links to all cards that have the label with that client's name on it.
That makes total sense. Yeah. What else would you want to be added to Help Scout? Like, I know that Help Scout's, like you said, is kind of not for, it's more of a help desk, but if you could add something else to Help Scout, what would it be?
Yeah. Another thing, this isn't really related to client communication. I guess maybe sometimes it is, but, it would also be nice to integrate, Help Scout with Stripe. And again, I think these integrations probably already exist. I just haven't really looked into them. But it would be cool to be able to see if I'm looking at a conversation with a particular client in Help Scout, to immediately have a link pointing to that client's billing profile in Stripe. Because I often find if I ever need to deal with a billing issue with a client or just to look at their account for a second, what often happens is I have to first search Help Scout for that client's email address, and then separately search Stripe for that client's email address, and to kind of pull up the two profiles. And it'd be nice to have those linked.
We use Stripe internally, and I feel you on the Stripe search. It's a brilliant API, a brilliant platform, and their actual GUI is a little lackluster.
Yep,
rightfully so. Is their style. So what else? So besides the Trello and the Help Scout, like how else do you kind of automate, in quotes, the client projects? Because you guys do seem to like have this awesome assembly line built. Like what are other ingredients to that recipe?
I'm like a freak about standard operating procedures and documenting everything and giving my team as much training materials as they probably way more than they even need. But we heavily use Google Docs for that. So we also use Google Docs to draft articles, but that's a separate folder in Google Docs. We have another folder in Google Docs called Operations. And inside that, we've got several folders containing procedures. So we've got like an article production procedure. We've got a procedure for setting up an article in WordPress, a procedure for setting up our social media, like social media posts for a client, procedures for setting up a drip email, at this point, I'd say 50 plus different procedure documents that we have. And it's not like the team refers to those every single day, but they do refer to them heavily when they're like new to the team and they're learning our processes. Mm-hmm. And it's just a way to be able to keep everything that we do documented and making sure that we always do things in a very standard way. And we don't do things for one client differently than we do them for another client. I think that's really important for a productized service. It makes it easy to make the service run really efficiently. It also makes it easy to onboard new teammates when teammates come in and out of the team. And it also just makes us really efficient. And like, I'm constantly going back to these procedures and finding ways, all right, how can we improve this? How can we make it better, higher quality, faster? You know, maybe this step isn't necessary, or maybe we need to remember to always do this. And just like constantly going back to those Google Docs and documenting those changes.
Are canned responses part of those documents? Like, do you have actual outlines?
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely. And so, yeah, we also use canned responses heavily, both in Help Scout. Like, Kat will use them pretty heavily in her emails to clients. As of today, as of this recording, I still heavily use my personal Gmail account really mostly for all the sales. Like when I'm talking to potential clients and prospects, as of right now, I'm the only salesperson. Actually, on my to-do list over the next couple of weeks is to onboard our first sales rep that isn't me.
Cool. So
thanks. Well, I'm kind of scared about it, because it's a big undertaking. I'm still kind of figuring out my way through it. But for now, all the sales related emails are contained in my personal Gmail account. I think once we have a sales team, I'll need to. What I did in Restaurant Engine when I did bring on a salesperson was we also used Help Scout for that, and we just created a separate mailbox. Like sales at the company in Help Scout. We might do that. I might just look at other CRM tools. I personally use canned responses in my Gmail account quite a bit. I've got like a canned response. So I can go through a few of them. I don't know what's more relevant to you, like my sales related emails or the stuff that Kat sends to existing clients, because she's got a whole list of canned responses there too.
Totally. Well, I mean, what we're focusing on is actually both. We don't want to say, oh, we're the Help Scout and the CRM and the whatever of client services, but we definitely see that a lot of consultants and agencies don't necessarily, they're not necessarily big enough to have a CRM, especially not to pay for one, because they can get pretty pricey pretty quickly.
Yep. And that's been us. I'd say right now we're still kind of in that boat. Like, it doesn't make sense to invest heavily in like an expensive CRM.
Yeah, and partially probably because you can't scale exponentially like yet, maybe, or because you don't have a sales team of more than a couple people. Like, it's just, yeah, it doesn't quite make sense. And so we're actually working on focusing on both, because we think that you should be able to transition a prospect into a client and then into a past client and back into a client. Seems like you shouldn't be switching systems. That's kind of it becomes mayhem a bit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm pretty happy with our the process that I go through with a new lead who comes into Audience Ops, and it involves a number of canned responses. So basically, somebody fills out the consultation form on the homepage of our website. That comes straight into my personal email address, email inbox. From there, sometimes I might customize the response, but for the most part, I just use a canned response that gives a quick reply that says, hey, thanks for getting in touch. I'd love to talk to you about company name. Here's my link to my Calendly address, which is a brilliant tool for scheduling appointments.
Cool.
So that's in the canned response, and then talk soon. And then, usually later that week or maybe the next week, the person has scheduled an appointment on my calendar. I get on the call with them, I do the consultation, and then immediately after that consultation, I fire off a canned response email to my virtual assistant, who, and so that canned response says, okay, this was the client's company name, this is the client's first name, last name, and who their target customer is. And then I have a couple of options, you know, use template one or template two or template three, and those refer to which plans we're recommending for that client. So for example, say I just spoke to, you know, company ABC and it was John Smith and they serve SaaS owners who care about analytics. Then I'll fire off the canned response email to my VA. It says, you know, company ABC, John Smith, target customer is SaaS owners who care about analytics. Let's use template one for them. And mm-hmm. just based on that, my VA will then go, he'll create a proposal. We use a tool called NUSII, NUSII, for that. Mm-hmm. And that's basically a proposal tool. Inside NUSII, we have a number of template proposals, just a couple of template proposals, which kind of outline certain plans. And we only offer like two plans. It's a very standardized, productized service. So it's like kind of plan one or plan two. And sometimes we offer them like the option of both. And so my VA will create that proposal. And then what he'll also do is go into audienceops.com, into our WordPress site, and generate a special page just for that client with like that client's name on it with the purchase button on that page. And so then my VA will reply to me and say, here's the link to the proposal and here's the link to the purchase page. And he'll just give me those two URLs. And then I fire off an email to the lead, to the prospect, with another canned response that says, you know, something like, hey, it was great to speak to you this week. Here's the proposal outlining everything we talked about. Here's that link. And when you're ready to get started, here's the link where you can open your account. And so then I just fire that off to the client. And another tool that I heavily, heavily use, and I've used it for years, is called followup.cc. Mm-hmm. And so usually when I send off that proposal to the client, I'll also BCC 1 week at followup.cc, and that'll basically give me a reminder 1 week later, hey, you should probably follow up on this proposal. And so that's basically the process. And then, you know, if the client signs up, if they go through and open their account, like basically they follow that link, they go to the purchase page, they purchase and subscribe to their plan. From there, I then send another canned response to my team, to my project manager, and to the writer who I'm assigning to that client, saying, you know, hey, new client just signed up. Here's all their information. Here's their email address, their company name, their name. This is the plan that they've signed up for. Go ahead and get started. And then it's basically handed over to Kat, my project manager, who sends an email to the client. A canned response, and this is coming from Help Scout at this point. Mm-hmm. And that basically says something like, you know, nice to meet you. Let's get started. The first step will be to schedule your kickoff call. And then she'll schedule that kickoff call with the client and with our writer. I think she uses Calendly for that as well. And then they do that kickoff call. So a couple of days later, they complete the kickoff call, and then she has another canned response from Help Scout. And stop me if I'm completely boring you at this point, but
no, this is it's so eloquent. You're making it sound so simple and so obvious. It's
like, So at once that kickoff call is completed, you know, usually like a couple of days later, she sends another canned response from Help Scout to the client saying, you know, great to speak to you today. The next step would be for you to fill out this getting started form. And that response contains a link to a page on our website, which has a form. It's like a really long form that the client fills out. giving us access to their WordPress, access to their Google Analytics, and a number of other things, their email tool, all that stuff. Basically, we get all that stuff collected all in one place, and then that comes back to us, and then we'll be able to get up and running and get them, like, get their blog set up and get us access to all that, and then we can start getting to work.
Wow. And so, like, I mean, it sounds, make it sound really easy, but it's obviously not. Like, what's something that you tried and totally didn't work?
Oh, I mean, all those pieces did not exist from day one.
Yeah.
We slowly built up that process over time, and we're even still improving it today. Like that form where, right at the end of that process where we collect all their information, that didn't exist for probably the first 4 or 5 months of Audience Ops. We kind of just asked them for different pieces over email, and it was like 5 or 6 different emails back and forth before we got everything that we needed. So it was pretty obvious. All right, we just need everything all in one shot.
Yeah. And what's the limiting factors for scaling then? Because I mean, it sounds pretty automated, but there's still a lot of people and a lot of moving parts.
Yeah, probably the biggest scaling issue that I'm just continuously dealing with is just growing the team of writers. And so for a while, for the first few months, it was mostly freelance writers that we work with. And we still have a number of freelance writers on the team, but as our client list grows, their workload grows. So we just started converting a couple of those writers to full-time employees at Audience Ops.
Awesome.
And so they're basically just writing full-time for Audience Ops. And I think it's a combination of ramping up freelancers to the point where they can go full time, and then continuously bringing in new writers into the team to get them started. And this is something that I haven't totally perfected yet, but it's I'm actually another thing that I'm working on, like, right now is a better hiring funnel to bring new writers in. And I mean, this is getting off like into a tangent. I don't know how interested you are in that, but yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, no, that makes sense. What's what are some other pain points around client communication?
I would probably say one issue that we deal with from time to time, not with all clients, but just a few of them, is they take a while to get back to us, and sometimes we need their feedback in order for us to move forward. Especially in the very first, you know, week or two, when we send them their initial blog topics, like, we need their sign off or their feedback for us to make edits before we can even start writing the first article. And if that feedback is delayed, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, then that means we're not going to publish their first article until like week 5 or week 6. Mm-hmm. And really, we try to aim to have that first article published by week 4. So that's an issue, and basically what happens is, you know, Kat just kind of manually follows up every couple of days to kind of bug them about it.
Is there like a reminder? Is that all manual? Does Kat just say, look at her list every single day?
That's basically manual. Like, the email that she sends is manual, but we have another Trello board that she basically uses to manage the onboarding of new clients. So in that first month of a client's engagement with us, like, that first month looks very different from all the other months. Basically, the first month is there are a number of things that need to get done. And so, just like our other Trello board where we track the progress of an article through the production line, we have this onboarding Trello board to track the onboarding process. So it's like, okay, kickoff call was done, and then getting started form has been completed. Initial topics have been internally completed, and we do like an internal strategy review process before we even send them to the client. So that step was completed, and then it's sent to the client, and then client's approval on those, and in some cases the client has us create an email course, so that's also part of our onboarding process. And so she kind of tracks the progress there, and so whenever she checks that Trello board, if something is behind or delayed, that's when she knows to send the client a reminder. The other thing I should mention is The day that a client signs up, and I sent that email over to my project manager and the writer saying, hey, we have a new client. The other thing that she does internally is our project manager is she'll then lay out the milestone dates for that new client to get their onboarding completed. And she'll send an email internally from her to the writer, to the assistant. We also have assistants that we assign to clients as well. So she's sending a group email to the writer, the assistant, and me that says, hey, these are the milestone dates for this new client. Internal topics finished by Friday. Topics are finished by Friday. We finish internal review by Monday. We send to the client by Tuesday. First article draft is started the following Monday. First article draft is due the Monday after that. The preview is sent to the client on this date, and the first published date for that client will be this date. And so from day one, we know all those milestone dates. And for the most part, we hit them, especially when the clients are pretty quick to give us feedback. But then sometimes, the feedback causes delays, and then we need to kind of reassess those milestone dates.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. A lot of process. It's great.
Yeah.
So the client. I mean, I remember when I was consulting full time. I never lost a client, but there were definitely times when I could tell the client had like lost some confidence in me. Mm-hmm. And it was usually because either I had asked for something from them and they were just slow to getting back, and so the whole thing was delayed. And so they don't see it as that. They see it as like, I'm now a week late on delivering something, or I'm like heads down, and so I don't communicate for like 3 days at a time or 5 days at a time, and they're like, what's going on?
Right.
And so there's definitely like points where I felt like, I was like, wow, they're a little nervous right now. Like, that's not good. And so I assume that, since it doesn't, you're not in communication with clients every single day, that there's you guys are sensitive to the way your clients feel. Like, I was, it seems a little direct to say, hey, what's the most popular reason for client churn? But like in the sense of like keeping clients, keeping clients on board and excited is probably a huge part of keeping clients. So how do you think about that?
Yeah, great question. So there are a few things that I've, like a few trends or patterns that I've started to notice it by this point. I wouldn't say that. So like talking specifically about that first month of getting a client on board, the issues that pop up here don't necessarily cause cancellations. Cancellations happen for other reasons, usually by like the third or fourth month. Usually cancellations happen because it's like, it's either like a startup and they need to, allocate their marketing budget elsewhere, or sometimes they decide to hire a content person in-house. But even then, we have clients who we work directly with their content person. So, cancellations have happened for those reasons. But in the first month, I've noticed one trend repeatedly and another thing that pops up too. So one thing that happens is we work primarily with founders of online businesses, and they are super, super busy. And probably the number one reason why they hired Audience Ops in the first place is because they're too busy to even think about content marketing themselves, and they don't want to think about it. They want to delegate it to someone, and they don't want to even give us any input whatsoever, even in the first few weeks. And this isn't the case for all of our clients. And we have designed the service to be completely hands off. Like you can have us work and we'll be set it and forget it, but really that dynamic doesn't happen until like month two and going forward. In month one, we really do need your feedback so that we know that we've got the topics nailed, so that we're really understanding your customers, your target audience. Like, we need to interview you and have, a call and get your feedback and approval on our topics and the email course. Otherwise our content is just not going to be as successful as it could be. So that can be a challenge. Sometimes it can be, they're just taking a while to get back to us, or, that sort of thing. The other thing that's happened like once or twice is the client, it's like the opposite issue, is the client is anxious to get going and they want us to like expedite our process and rush our process and get that very first blog post published as soon as possible, even sooner than we're capable of publishing it. And we're very careful about this, and we don't even honor this request anymore. We did once, and it actually caused the client, it was the one time so far that I've had to fire a client, because she wasn't happy, and because our team was completely stressed out by it. And basically what happened was, she signed up and she was like, I want the first blog post published within 2 weeks from the day that she signed up. And I mean, if you're just a solo writer, knocking out an article within a week is not a problem. But if you're an operation like us, it's not possible, because we have multiple people involved. We do a heavy amount of internal quality assurance. And even before we start writing anything, we do a heavy amount of research and interviews and strategy sessions internally. So it's like, so basically what I told her was like, you know what? All right, we can expedite this by 1 week, basically publishing it by the third week instead of the fourth week. But what that's going to mean is, there's going to be zero time for us to make any edits or revisions before the publish date. And so what we've tried to do, and this is something that we learned early on, we had to adjust. We, like, one article in our production line actually takes like 4 weeks from start to finish. And so we've purposely built in an extra week of buffer time between the day that Kat sends the preview to the client and the day that it publishes live. And that gives us like a 7-day period for the client to take a look, give us any feedback, give us any revisions, and we can make some edits before the publish date. Mm-hmm. But when that's rushed, you know, that's just not possible. Like we would have to send the preview like Friday, and the article is going to publish on Monday, and you know, our team doesn't usually work over the weekend, so you know, making any final like last minute adjustments are not going to be possible. And then if you're not happy with the article after it goes live, it's like,
then you're not going to be happy.
You're not going to be happy, and it's like, kind of, what did you expect? Like, we didn't have any time to get up and running with this. So, yeah.
That makes total sense. It's like it's off from the get-go, a recipe for disaster with her.
Yep.
It's too bad. So so why does it make more sense to do productized services for you instead of for audience ops, I should say, instead of just doing client-to-client, you know, retainers, like long-term retainers? Because couldn't you up the price every time?
Well, what do you mean by retain? Like, you know, our clients are subscribed for you know, ongoing subscriptions of the service. Well, what do you mean? Like, what would be different?
Sure. I guess the difference in my mind is that you don't publish a price on your homepage. And like, if you were just to consider yourself, if you never heard the term productized services, then you would just go the old consulting route of just saying, this is what I do, and this is what the package is. This is and not publishing prices, I guess. And
yeah,
and then you could change the prices. Like, maybe some people you'd give it a little bit less for, and some people you jack the prices way up because you know that they're going to be a pain in the butt because they're a bigger team or something, or maybe they can pay more. Like, what's the
yeah thought? Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, that's pretty similar to what I used to do years ago as a freelance web designer. You know, I didn't really publish my prices, and I gave different quotes to different clients. But I think the productized service, you know, for me, from my perspective, is to build it in this way, to launch it in this way, that's what made it something that I'd actually want to do. I have no interest in being a freelance consultant anymore. And one of my personal goals when I started Audience Ops was, you know, from day one, like, I'm not going to be the person writing the articles for clients. I knew from day one that I'd start to build a team, and my role in the company is to build up these systems and make them efficient and build the value proposition and focus on who our target clients are, you know, really like running it as a business and not not requiring me to be the expert or the talent or the person spending my hours delivering the work. So that's the whole concept behind building it as a productized service, because by doing it as a very focused service, like we just do blog articles and email newsletters for clients, you know, a couple other details in between the social media posts and whatnot, but it's all related to their blog. You know, by focusing on that and not throwing in web design and not throwing in video production and not throwing in, you know, infographics or something that we don't really do, you know, it allows us to stay focused. It allows us to easily build up these systems like I described and easily bring a team into the process. So that's on like the internal operations side. But then on the sales side, it's much easier to sell this way, because it's like, look, we solve this very specific problem. You're a software company and you know you need to be doing content marketing. You don't have the resources to do it in-house. This is the solution to make sure that you are doing content marketing the right way, doing it with a level of quality that you're happy with. And so it, like, if you're a software owner and you identify with that, you see our sales page and it's like that speaks directly to the specific problem that I'm thinking about, you know, whereas you compare that to a consultant or a freelancer, you know, that's not so clear. You might have a conversation. It's like, well, how can you help me? Or I think I need this, and this, you know, how many hours is that going to cost me for you to do that? It's a much messier process, and it's actually more difficult for the client to buy that way, and it's more difficult for the consultant to sell that way. And that's why I've been so, you know, obsessed with productized services these last couple of years, is because it's much easier to build a value proposition and it's easier to sell.
It makes sense. Yeah. And shortening one of the big places where you lose the most money when you're consulting is in that the proposal phase, when you're spending a lot of energy figuring out who the client is and getting them to sign on the dotted line. I totally could take, you know, a quarter of all of your effort for a whole project. Which is crazy. That's not where you should be spending all your time. So that makes total sense.
Exactly. Yeah. That's a big, big part of it. I used to spend days just creating one proposal, and with like a 50-50 chance that it'll even be accepted.
If you're lucky too. Right. I definitely had projects where it was, you know, I was completely in the dark about what my chances even were.
Yeah. And actually going back to that, what you said about, you know, giving different clients different prices, it's a good point. And I do know actually for a fact that we're probably leaving some money on the table with some of our clients. Like, we know that some of our clients look at us like, this is super cheap, we're getting such a good deal, you know, because they're pretty large companies and our price is like nothing to them. Other clients, I think, you know, the price is kind of like just right in their budget. You know, there's the question of like, maybe someday we'll like remove our prices from the website and give different price quotes to different clients. But I, to be honest, I'm not a fan of that. And to go along with the productized service methodology, it's, look, we're building the solution. I know what our costs are to deliver what we do, and I know a price that makes sense. I mean, we might increase prices across the board down the road, but I think it's, I like having one standard price or a couple tiers that are standardized, just like any other product that you'd buy, you know, like a SaaS or a product on Amazon. That's like, this product does this thing and this is the price tag. It just makes it easier and simpler. And
And I guess I'm also kicking around the, like, I'm imagining a Venn diagram in my head where productized consulting is one circle and the other one's value-based pricing. Or you can also do neither one of them when you're consulting or running an agency. So that's totally doable too. But yeah, there's like maybe times when your clients fall into both categories, or just fall into the productized services category where they're getting just like the value is so much more than the cost. It's like if you actually did value based pricing, it'd be, you know, you'd be charging them 10 times as much or something.
And I think in a way, We do value-based pricing, and I think most productized services do, in that this is what we do. we know that it has a value if you're a certain type of company with a certain type of size, and like we're not charging based on our time, you know, we're not charging based on the number of hours we put into each client. It's just, again, making sure that everything is so standardized that we know, give or take, how long one article takes to produce, and we know how many different people and different resources go into it. So it kind of all, like, the math kind of works out in the end. It takes some trial and error to figure that out. You know, it certainly did for us, but yeah.
Very cool. So what's the next exciting thing for Audience Ops? Is there a new product coming out? Are you all focused on scaling what you have? What's up?
Yeah, I guess I'm focused on two things. One is to continue to scale up the service. You know, we're looking to kind of double the client base this year, and we're definitely on track for that. But that's going to mean more writers, bringing on sales reps, and it's like the systems and the processes that got us to the first half of that are going to need to evolve and scale along with it going forward. So I'm really focused on that. But then the other thing that we've started to do is release other products, you know, not service-related products. So we've got a couple of plugins. One has already been released. That's the Content Upgrades plugin. It's kind of an email opt-in tool. So that's already been released. That's like a WordPress plugin that we sell, depending on the license, it's like $49 to $149. And then we've got two more plugins that are in the works. One is like almost finished and ready to go into like beta testing, and that's like a landing pages plugin. The thinking here is that these are tools that we're building internally and we're using internally for our clients. And that's how the Content Upgrade started. That's how the landing pages plugin will go. You know, when we create an email course for a client, we're going to start creating a landing page to promote that email course using our plugin. We create these bonus opt-ins for each article, and we've built our own plugin to allow us to put that email opt-in and the response email onto the client's site. So, and then we're going to do something down the road with, probably with reports, where, 'cause we send a client their monthly report, but we want to, I want to like automate that so that we can see basically like content marketing analytics, grabbing like specific traffic to specific articles and email opt-ins and putting that all into a report. Like currently that's something that we do manually. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we'll build a plugin for that and then eventually clean it up and make it ready to sell as a standalone product. So that's the next phase of what we're going to be doing this year and next year.
And it's a great argument too for productized consulting and once you get the processes down, you start freeing up time, and you start freeing up that time to build tools for, you know, freeing up more time, and also spinning off and selling separately if that's also interesting. So that's pretty cool. It's a great argument for it.
Yeah, I think the idea is to kind of diversify our revenue a bit, and you know, the selling software would be much more scalable than the service. I mean, that being said, the service is probably more profitable because it's higher price point and all that. But the other thing to go along with the products idea is we'll probably do some sort of educational product, like a course for clients who kind of want to implement their own content marketing themselves, but they don't necessarily want to hire Audience Ops to do it for them. It's kind of selling like our methodology of doing content marketing and teaching all that in some sort of educational product.
Cool. Very cool. So what's the rest of this podcast and this course looking at? What's on the horizon for it?
The productized podcast?
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is something new, that I'll be launching in the next 2 weeks or so. And this, you know, this is not from Audience Ops. This is just from myself. I've already recorded about 20 episodes. Cool. And the idea, and so most of them are just case studies with productized service owners. And, And so I've spent the last month or so recording these episodes, and I've now got most of them edited, and I set up the website. Basically the last step probably next week is I'll just start to schedule these episodes out to publish throughout the rest of this year. So the idea for me was, like, I spend almost all my time working on audience ops, and so this is kind of a side project, and I wanted to just devote like 1 month to it and get it all packaged up, schedule it to go out, and then just kind of be done with it so I can get right back onto audience ops.
That's fair. Makes total sense. Mm-hmm. Deadlines for sure.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, this has been super helpful for me. This is I have some good notes, and it's super helpful as we continue to build for Project Pulse and think about the client communication kind of struggles, and I mean a lot of the stuff that you have built into your workflow right now are things that we're thinking about unifying under one roof. So, hopefully helping a lot of people who don't have as good of a hold on the processes as you do. So, it's super exciting to get some validation around that. And I'll definitely, once we have the first the alpha open, I'd love to get your opinion on it.
Oh, absolutely. Definitely keep me posted on that. I've been a fan of what you guys have been doing with Project Pulse up until now, so I'm really excited to see how things iterate from here. And I hope this conversation wasn't too boring for anyone. But
if it was, they're crazy. This is the good stuff. So cool. Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, no problem.
Thanks for tuning in today. Get all the show notes for this entire season at productizepodcast.com. And to get my free Productize Crash Course, where I share my best strategies for launching and sustaining your Productize service business, head over to productizecourse.com. All right, time to get back to working on the business.